What we're going to look at today, I've tentatively entitled this idea of how we can, five ways, actually principles to help us outgrow painful self-limitation. And let's just start by identifying that idea a little bit more clearly. I don't know of anyone, and I'm sure you don't either, that likes running into the feeling of getting stopped somewhere, being unable to do or accomplish. And of course, God help us in this world of ours. Where we are increasingly convinced, really, that there are places that we should not tread, that we ought not go, especially with our culture the way it is, things we should not say, let alone attempt to do. And not just for the fear of what others may think of us, but more because there's something in us that doesn't want to run into certain moments that all of us run into all the time, which is this sudden realization that I'm having this reaction. And I've had it 1,000 times, and I don't know what to do with it. I mean, even if we got that far to realize that we were having a repeated negative reaction, that a fear had come up, a worry, a doubt, an anxiety, if we could just get far enough to realize that this is not the first time I've had this reaction. But as we'll see as we go into our material today, that for most of us, we're not even aware of the fact that we're having the same reaction again and again and again and again. And certainly you can see, at least I trust you can, that if I keep having the same reaction, that by the fact that I'm limited to the content of that reaction and the choices it makes, which I am, especially if I have no idea that I'm in the grips of one, then certainly my life is limited in that moment. Limited to literally a binary set of choices, fight or flight. Because essentially reactions, what they do, and again we'll look at this in a moment, is they identify the condition that we feel conflict in as something outside of ourselves. Now, there are probably more than less people who have decided that they're going to live with that kind of compromise. The limitation of being remanded over to a certain set of conditioned reactions, where the moment we get set off, we go in search of an explanation, someone or something to blame for that. But that's a limitation that is painful in itself. And the reason that it's painful, sorry it took so long to get to this idea, because we're not limited. Not in the sense that we think we are. Sometimes it's hard to imagine. I've outlined it before. If you have had the experience of, as I did when I was young, going to a zoo, you know that animal in a cage is in pain. Can't say it's in pain, but it paces, it chews on itself, it pulls its feathers out, God help us. No matter how wonderful that circumstance may be, the creature is in an unnatural condition. And when we are looking at and feeling as if we are limited in some way in that moment, we are in an unnatural condition to ourselves in that moment. And the unnatural condition is not the circumstances that seems to produce that feeling of limitation. The limitation and the pain of it is in our own consciousness that doesn't understand itself. And that's what all of our spiritual work is about. I mean, why are we here? We're 6.5 minutes into our time together. Why do we meet, you and I, on Saturday mornings or whatever time it is that you happen to be sharing this material with me? Why do we meet? Why do the men and women who, for instance, join me at the foundation several times a week or online, as I hope you do, for the talks, what are we looking for? What are we searching for? And in short, the answer is, and I think all of us can agree, that we're looking for a way to make sense of our lives. I want to know what the, not just what the purpose of my life is in its totality, but I wake up in the middle of the night with a troubling thought. I get in my car and I'm anxious, running somewhere. What's the purpose of those moments? And why am I consistently caught up in those kind of reactions that produce them? So in this instance, and perhaps this is the way it is for you, and there's nothing wrong with it, it's just part of the journey, but certainly for the majority of human beings, when they think what I'm searching for is they're looking for themselves in this world, make a mark for myself. And in some ways it's natural. I want to make a better life for myself in this world. And when I want to make a better life for myself in this world, what do? And the short answer is I start educating myself. I want a better job. I want a new career. Maybe that's all natural and necessary. But to do so, I need to educate myself. But if you've reached a certain point in your development, and again, that all of this unfolds naturally. You can't stop a rose that sits in the light from opening its petals. Neither can a human being, no matter where we are in our development, neither can we stop the natural impulse that we have to continue flowering, to continue growing. So at a certain point in our lives, we recognize that if the world was able to give us what it is that we went looking into the world to fill us with, we would be filled by now. But we start to understand that I did educate myself to the things of this world, and I became and have served as a worldly man or a worldly woman, but now the world is not enough. Not the world as it is. And I understand that there's nothing that I'm going to add to myself from this world that's going to be enough. And that's kind of a difficult time, isn't it, if we reach that place? And if we do, then what does a man or a woman do when they realize that the things that they've acquired, position, power, authority, social prominence, that those things may, and as they do, allow for certain comfort, they don't console my soul. Most of us can buy for ourselves, at least we should be able to, at least the decent necessities, good food if we can afford it, have a comfortable place to live. I have a nice little house on a mountain here. I don't need any more than that. Got a fireplace going. So my work in the world has allowed me to have certain physical comforts. But what good is it, no matter where I'm sitting, whether it's in this little house that I'm in or someone sitting in a palace, if I'm in pain when I'm sitting there, because something in me understands it still hasn't been fulfilled. This is a very specific point in a person's development. It's somewhat akin to the idea of the prodigal son. But what happens if I've educated myself and for my education, I still sit in a place in my own life, no matter what it looks like, where it doesn't satisfy the need that I have to do what? To understand myself, to fulfill the purpose of my life. I thought the purpose of my life was making money. No, that's not the purpose of my life. Having children, no, that's not the purpose of my life. Having grandchildren, no, that's not the purpose of my life. Visiting Africa and seeing the wild animals, no, that's not the purpose of my life. Those are places along the road in my life that are intended to help us realize certain parts of our journey, which is always that you can, at any point, look and see, what is it then I have to do? If it isn't to educate myself, now what must I do? And the answer is, I must illuminate myself. I educate myself and the world around me, And now that education has proven itself to be incomplete, no matter how successful a human being I've been. And how do I know it's incomplete? Because I still feel incomplete. I'm still afraid. My mind still torments me. In fact, a lot of my fear and torment is over how to keep the things that I thought were going to free me. That was an experience I went through in my 20s. So what happens now? Because when we have this idea that I must illuminate myself, that that's the new task, then we are visited by a certain idea, and that idea is commensurate with the impulse to begin discovering myself. So I think to myself, and I'm making a subtle shift here, I hope you'll make it with me, I think to myself, well, my task now is to find myself. I thought I found myself in the world, but I didn't find myself in the world. What I learned about myself in the world is how easy it is to lose myself there. Because the world just isn't the place that we're in, the people, the conditions. The world we are in is a world within ourselves before it is a world that we are in outside of ourselves. One of the founding principles that helps us outgrow painful self-limitation is the idea that the inner determines the outer, but we don't know much about the inner. And because we don't know much about the inner, we're kind of caught in a loop where a certain misunderstanding takes place. And then because we don't understand why that circumstance, why this emptiness, why this loneliness, why this fear, because we don't understand why I'm suddenly full of anticipation or dread, then in that moment, what happens to us? We have a certain reaction. The reaction tells us the problem's outside of us. And then we set out diligently to control or change the circumstances that we see as responsible for the sense of emptiness or fear or pain that we're in. So here's the first thing I want to touch on with you, this idea that the inner determines the outer as the first principle of self-illumination. It should be clear that there is no getting away from what we do not understand about ourselves. Let's just look at it. There's no getting away from what we don't understand about ourselves. We think that we can't get away from certain people that set us off. I hear that all the time. Or that he's like this, or they're like that, that men are toxic, that women are sorry, whatever it may be. And so I'm forever in a place in my life where I look out, and when I'm in a certain kind of pain or anxiety, a certain distress, my mind always says the condition is the problem. But the condition isn't the problem. The pain is not inherent in the circumstance. Try to see it with me. The fear is not inherent in the circumstance. The circumstance is the condition under which aspects of my own consciousness are revealed to me. The circumstance, the condition, is a kind of mirror. And when I look into that mirror, what I tend to see is almost like something projected on a screen. In my mind's eye, I'm so conditioned and habituated to seeing the circumstance as the source of my fear or my pain. It never dawns on me a very specific thing that we have to look at together. For instance, we're still looking at the first principle. Doesn't look like I'm going to get to five of these. Why do we avoid painful moments? Why do we avoid any moment whatsoever where we feel punished by it? Now, that you, I know if you're listening to me, go, what a dumb question, guy. I avoid it because I don't want to be punished by it. I don't want the pain in it. And you see, that's the very first mistake that we make. That's our perception. That's why we need illumination, inward illumination. There is no such thing as a punishing moment. You say, hold on a second. I lost this. He died. This was taken from me. I was abused. You're telling me that's not a punishing moment? I'm telling you, the moment is not the punishment. And as long as we believe the moment is the punishment, I'm going to look at the moment as something outside of myself, responsible for something I don't want to experience in myself. and spend my entire life educating myself, in quotes, trying to illuminate myself in such a way that I finally gain mastery over the world around me. You will never understand, let alone be free, by trying to master the world around you. You and I are mastered by the world within ourselves that we don't understand. That is our only master, and it is not meant to be our master. We are meant to be the master of our own world, of our own inner life. Not mastered, commanded by fear. Not dragged around by despair or some kind of depression because something didn't go the way we wanted to. Let me help you understand this with the idea that we're looking at, well, what makes a moment painful? And let's look at it together. Isn't what makes a painful moment, long before I actually know the reason for why it's painful, is that suddenly you've said something, I see something on the news. Suddenly there is this immense resistance that rises up inside of me. It starts small, but it surfaces. And then what? That out of that resistance to the moment that I didn't even know was in me, this is pretty important to understand. Haven't you ever marveled at how unbelievably set you can be against what someone said? Without having any clue at all the moment before that you were about to become inflamed and angered by something someone said? And how in that moment of that negative reaction absolutely concludes beyond the shadow of a doubt that the reason for the pain or the fear is because of what the person said or didn't say, because of what we saw or didn't see. So the first thing to understand here is this. Our present consciousness that is not awake, not illuminated, looks outside and believes that the pain we feel over a condition is because of the circumstance. The pain is not in the circumstance. The pain, if you want to use those words, is in the reaction. And so we start to look at this. We go, yeah, I get that. It's the reaction that's painful. And I don't want that reaction because it's painful. But now we have to make another dive. We have to illuminate this further. It's neither the unwanted condition or the negative reaction that are punishments. Imagine for a moment, and I don't know if I'm conveying this to you. Here I go someplace, I turn on the news, I get up in the morning, I've got something to do. I'm having a negative reaction. There's pain in the negative reaction. We believe the pain is because of the condition. The pain is not because of the condition. The pain is because there is a conflict in me, in this consciousness. And the conflict in this consciousness is that it sees the cause for its pain as a condition that it doesn't want. But what if, trying to get to this point, what if we understood that what these painful reactions that we're trying so hard to avoid actually are, is that they serve us. Our painful reactions are intended to serve us, not to be the source of our suffering. I'm going to say it again. These painful reactions are not the source of a punishment. They are intended to serve us, not to make us suffer. How can a painful reaction serve us? Just think for a moment. And a lot of us spend our lives, and I'm being somewhat facetious, trying to make enough money to get to where people serve us. We all want to be served. It's a sort of an innate misunderstanding, upside down relationship that we have with this world based on, as a spiritual man or a spiritual woman, everything is created to serve us, just as we are created to serve the moment in which that takes place. How is a negative reaction meant to be my servant? Because if I am awake and aware of myself in the moment of that negative reaction, it is serving to teach me something about a consciousness that is not illuminated. The negative reaction has brought in that moment, I wish I had my sparking device. You know, when you go camping in a survival kit, there's a magnesium bar and a striking bar, and you hit it, and there's a spark. That moment, that we don't want. And that instantaneous painful reaction, when the moment we don't want meets the consciousness that's sure that it's a problem, there is a certain light that takes place. We have no way of knowing what lives in us without the conditions that bring to the surface of our consciousness the depth and breadth of all the things that sit in the dark of it. And until we are willing and able to understand that it is these reactions that are actually a way in which something that we do not know lives in us is revealed to us. But all we know to do with these reactions is to push away the person or the problem seen as causing them, instead of recognizing that in that split second, something has caused an upheaval in this consciousness that it will not and cannot bring about by itself. And suddenly that idea, that image, that belief that I should always know exactly who I am and what to do, that you should always be this way, that the world should never move against what I believe are my best. Every last one of those moments, we walk around as the unconscious instrument of the content of this consciousness that has been literally fabricated over millennia. It's not even my consciousness or your consciousness. We have an individual relationship to it. But the general idea that life owes us something, for instance, is part of that consciousness. And when life seems to take something from us, up comes this reaction. How would I ever know that I go through my life believing that most of what happens to me shouldn't happen unless something in me believes that it knows how things should happen? And that's the pain. Because the second of the principles that I want to talk to you about connected to this is that when we have a negative reaction, what's taking place? In that moment, I am convinced by my reaction that is pointing to something, someone outside of me, that I know precisely what the source of this conflict is. And that reaction has no intelligence in it at all. It is simply a blind response to a nature that is asleep to itself and responding in the only way it knows how to respond to unwanted moments. And what is that moment where the reaction points to you as the problem, other than what? It is a conclusion. So the second principle is that we have to learn to see these reaction-based conclusions as limitations, because that's exactly what they are. I'm going to pause for a moment. I haven't seen anything new come up in the feed. Am I still here? It'd be funny if I was talking for the last 10 minutes okay, good. Thanks, Kate. Have you ever done that before? Have you ever been talking to someone? Sometimes I'll be talking to my wife, and I'll be looking off someplace, trying to think of what I want to say, and I'll turn around, and she's gone. I'm talking to myself, or even better yet, sometimes you get disconnected on the phone, and you're sitting there you've talked for like 2 or 3 minutes. So let me get back to the point. Following me, I hope. Inner determines the outer. The reactions are not punishments. They are insights. They are a certain window that opens up into a consciousness that we cannot see the content of it other than through the reaction and what that reaction is coming to us through. What part of myself believes, for instance, that I should always know exactly what to do in every given moment? See, again, most of us don't think to ourselves that we think to ourselves we should know exactly what to do in every given moment. But the way that we can know that we think that way, and that, by the way, that it's quite painful to think that way, is because the moment that a moment happens that we don't want or don't understand, what happens to us? Suddenly we're full of resistance and then judgment and then trying to figure out through a reaction what to do with that moment that has come and challenged this assumption that we have about ourselves. So in that moment where that reaction comes, just it points a finger and assures not, I have now concluded what the problem is in the moment. And I couldn't come to the conclusion or feel the conflict with the moment were it not for something in me that had reached that what? That decision about how life should be and how others should treat me. Now, here's the point. One of the reasons that this conclusion is an illusion, a limitation, is because it's based in a false idea. Real life is not something set. No moment is a static moment. Real life, and you and I are in real life, although, or I should say, real life is in us. We're not yet really in real life. Real life is a ceaseless state of transformation. There isn't anything that isn't undergoing, even as I'm talking to you, a transformation. Every cell in the body, every condition that the cell is related to and that the body is related to through other bodies, every last thing is going through this ceaseless transformation. We never think to ourselves when we walk outside that part of the beauty of the moment, and right now it is a glorious spring morning here, all the leaves, the new leaves have opened up on the oaks that had no leaves before. And there's something about the splendor, the beauty of a new leaf, the green. I think part of its beauty is that it's so hungry to catch light. That you sit and everything's transforming. The leaves are changing. And when the leaves take in the food, the trees are changing. And the earth is changing. Everything's changing. But you and I don't look at life as though it's changing. We look at life as something that we have to change into what we want to see so that we know who we are. That's hell. That's what narcissism is being captured in a static image of ourselves, but without knowing that we're captured by a static image of ourselves. For instance, we have a static image of how people should treat us. We don't know we have that static image, but when we look into the world and something doesn't match the image we have of how we should be seen by others, in that moment we are in conflict and we think we're in conflict with the person or the world. The conflict is not with the person or the world. The conflict is that there's something in us that believes we should be seeing what we want to see and it should be static. You should always treat me the way I want to be treated. I should never be without knowing what I need to know in order to get through the moment that I'm troubled by. When the only reason I'm troubled by the moment because I went into it thinking I knew how the moment should be. I don't know if I can wrap this around clearly enough for you to see what I'm trying to get to. But if in fact that this moment that I'm talking to you, and it is a fluid moment, that I am as surely being transformed by what I'm being given to give you as you are by listening to me, by what the reactions are to everything you're receiving. All of this is a single movement. But we have something in us that wants to fix all of these movements into something that we can recognize and that we base the sense of freedom on. Imagine, my sense of freedom is established in a consciousness that only knows how to be free as long as things remain fixed and keep me in place the way I want to be. Can you not see the conflict in that? And is the conflict in the world around me, or is the conflict in a consciousness that has reached this conclusion that I had no idea it had reached? And that brings us to the next principle. What happens in these moments where things don't go the way we want them to go? We know what happens. We are suddenly caught up in two basic non-solutions. What are the two basic non-solutions? We either pretend that what just happened isn't a problem because we're going to figure our way around it, or we pretend that we've already solved this problem. Now we just have to go back and bring into the present moment the past solution and then do it again and do it again and again and again. I'm pausing because I'm looking at something in myself, even as I'm speaking to you. Have you ever wondered why it is that you think you have to know who you are and what you are to do in any given moment? It happens so fast inside of us. There's something in us, and this is the pretense part. There's something in us that does not want to see that it doesn't know what it says it knows. For instance, it says to us, you know, you have to appear a certain way. You have to get through this. You have to pull this off because there's a lot at stake. You go into a meeting with people, you have a business, you're with friends or family, you're at a dinner table having a glass of wine with somebody. And somebody brings up a topic or somebody says something that challenges you. And have you not noticed in that moment that there's this immediate reaction and a certain disturbance? And something is urging you in from within yourself to find a way to feel like you know what's happening. Because you've been disturbed. Something's upset you. And now I want to know what just happened. Yes, I hope you see it. And in the moment where I feel this disturbance, this fear, maybe because I was pretending to be someone or something that I'm not at all, which is usually what causes this. What's real can't be disturbed. What's real is changing. It's not the disturbance that we feel in these moments is because something suddenly realizes it's not quite matching the moment, meeting the mark. And in that moment, something in me, it just rushes to want to know how to handle the moment, how to handle the disturbance. And can you see with me that reaction, in order for me to know how to handle the disturbance, the first thing that I have to know is what's disturbing me. For instance, what's disturbing me is that I don't want you to see me in that light. What's disturbing me is that I don't want this circumstance to unfold this way because it seems to be set against my best interest. We look out and there's an instantaneous conclusion as to what's disturbing us. And that reaction then remands us over into a set of choices and actions how to deal with what we see as the disturbance. But you see the problem. The condition isn't the disturbance. What's disturbed is something in us that meets the moment believing that we know how the moment's supposed to be, who I'm supposed to be, who you're supposed to be. Now look, in the world, this is all pretty much mechanical. You know, don't get caught up trying to think to yourself, well, I should be. It just all happens mechanically. Our personalities are so well defined. The roles these personalities have in their relationships, all this just happens mechanically. And because it happens mechanically, there's no real chance of illumination. Because we're not meant to be mechanical human beings. We're not meant to mechanically answer a fear with a description of whatever the problem is so that we can then do something and struggle with the problem and escape the condition because we can't escape the condition of our consciousness. Our consciousness is not meant to be escaped. Our consciousness is meant to be transformed. Or more accurately, we are meant to transform our relationship to our consciousness. And we cannot change our relationship to our consciousness as long as we believe that the reactions that are coming out of that consciousness know what's going on and what to do and who we are. So that we started this talk talking about what fulfilling the purpose of our life, understanding why are we here, and that all of our search one way or another, whether it's just educating ourselves in the world in order to gain possessions and authority, or finally recognizing that possessions and authority in the world do not bring an end to the dissatisfaction that sits in the soul that wants to know the divine, that whole journey is this unfolding as a direct constant, really, revelation of the fact that I am meant to be an interior human being. That I'm not meant to be run around by my reactions. I'm meant to turn around and use my reactions to see the consciousness, the demands, the identification, the conditions in that consciousness that always have the same reaction. Then something new can happen, because the idea, the illusion of being limited falls away, including the fear of it. Why? Because, and to me, the three most powerful words in the English language, no matter what level they're applied at, I can learn. We have it so upside down because our mind, divided as it is forever looking out and trying to imagine and then manifest some condition that when we can finally manifest it, we'll sit there and look into the mirror of that moment, see what we've made of ourselves, and feel like we've actually achieved some substance, like we're real. Failing, of course, to recognize that there's no such thing as a static manifestation, that even the conditions that we're able to control are changing even as we're trying to control them, so that we look into this world and we keep seeing everything fuzzy and moving, this moving matrix, because we are part of what we see. So to understand that means, well, what do I do then when I have these reactions? Just as a simple exercise to bring our time together to a close. Instead of letting the reaction define me and run me around, trying to secure what my reaction tells me needs to be put back in place so that I can feel like things are perfect again, let me use the moment of the reaction to turn around into myself. To just be interested. What is that about? See, we do not ask ourselves, what is that reaction about, without listening to the first thing our mind tells us. Well, that reaction is about that person and why they are, how come they have to be like that? This reaction is because your security has been threatened. This is a terrible place you're in right now. So reactions do what? All reactions that we listen to and then identify with point to the circumstances outside of us. And as long as we're directed to look outside of ourselves for a solution to the suffering that's taking place in ourselves, guess what? The conditions are going to repeat themselves because the consciousness keeps running into itself. Can I, as best I'm able to do it, understand, keeping it as simple as I possibly can in this moment, that when I feel this sudden compulsion, this sudden feeling like I've got to do, I've got to be, I've got to get, I have to convince, can I use the moment where any imperative sense of myself appears to turn my attention around and look into that moment to see what it is in me in that moment that is driving this reaction? That's all I have to do. I'm not here to take control of my reactions. I'm here to illuminate the consciousness that the reaction comes out of. because in the illumination of the consciousness is the same as finally recognizing that these reactions are mechanical in nature. They appear when they appear because of the conditions in that consciousness, the conditioned content. And so the very ability to witness the reaction produces the first essential separation from the illusion of a self that somehow or other has to control these circumstances. We make a big deal out of everything. Because the bigger deal we make out of everything, the bigger and more important we seem to be. But the deal is not taking place outside of us. We're already a part of the real deal. Our task is to enter into the real deal, the real relationship with the divine, the real relationship with what we are given to see in these moments, so that in being in a real relationship, which is part of recognizing the ceaseless transformation of the moment and ourselves as well, in being in that real deal, we are given a real life. We discover the purpose of our existence on this planet, which is to be part of this transformation, an important part of it, I might add. 43 minutes, I better bring it to an end. So, use the reaction and don't let it run you around. Use it to turn around. See what you can learn. Be well. Bye.